First, I'd like to introduce our panelists. We have Raymond Merriman from Farmington Hills, Michigan, David Raley from Atlanta, Georgia, Grace Morris from Chicago, Illinois, Caroline Casey from Washington, D.C., Tad Mann, A.T. Mann from Hudson, New York, Leanne Thomas-Wade from New York, New York, Roy Gillett from
UK.
The UK, Surrey, from Antonia Langsdorf from Germany, Lynn Coyner from Washington, D.C., and John Marcusella from New York, New York. They represent many areas of knowledge in astrology. Primarily, we're going to be talking about the economy, the presidential race, and the chart of New Orleans, and 2012. Perhaps we can start with the chart of our host city. And I know there's a great deal of interest. And that is the chart of New Orleans. And for that, I'd like to turn things over to Caroline Casey.
Oh, well, I love this chart. I mean, there's many charts of cities, of course. But check out that Sun-Neptune conjunction in Taurus. One of the best lectures I ever went to was in 1971 in England. And it was a very smart British guy giving a lecture on Neptune. And he said, New Orleans, quintessentially Neptune, it's underwater, it's a seaport, it's the birthplace of jazz. And he did this great thing of Neptune through the signs with jazz music, Neptune in Virgo, technical, Neptune in Libra, cool shades, Neptune in Scorpio, anyway, he did a great thing. But what I've always said is if the soul of this country had a physical address, it would be New Orleans. Because this is the place where, you know, 18. Death and birth and where vision is invited to incarnate into Taurus. So I love that. And I love the Leo moon, you know, the Mardi Gras dynamic. And I love the model of, now pulling Army veterans home to rebuild New Orleans and all that that represents to do good works. And there's more and more to be said.
Okay, great. And the G8 summit, which was recently held, was an important meeting considering the global economy. And so I'd like Roy to maybe talk about that a little bit. And then in the audience, we also have Sam Crawford from Tucson, Arizona, and Hakan Kirkoglu.
Thank you.
You're welcome from Istanbul, Turkey. And I would like them, as well as Ray, to weigh in after Roy speaks.
Yeah, well, we could go on for a long time about this, but basically the bottom line for me is that Pluto is no longer in Sagittarius, but the world leaders don't realize it. And they're constantly talking about the Bill Clinton managed to, and Alan Greenspan managed to solve the problem by creating a growth of values so that an apparent deficit was turned into a profit by 2000. And then it was attempted over and over again. And what we come to with Pluto in Capricorn is that point of truth where you have to really structure properly. And most of the ideas that are going around are not really fundamentally addressing the issue. In fact, I sometimes think that the money that's being spent in flying these high-powered world leaders to these conferences all over the world to not solve the problem could be better spent in solving the problem, you know. But so I really feel we need to think fundamentally about what kind of growth we need, not just any kind of growth, but what kind of growth we need. And until we do with Pluto in Capricorn, we're going to go from one disaster to another. That's my take on it.
And I would like to speak to the UK. Mm. In this month's stock market newsletter, I wrote on the Conservative Prime Minister, David Cameron, whose austerity program hasn't worked and given the UK two quarters of recession. Mm. So other countries where that hasn't been done and they are not in recession, including the US.
Austerity is not necessarily the answer, but neither is growth that is based on going out shopping and spending money you haven't got. Well, there's a deeper solution that we haven't found. We have to change our attitude to what capitalism is.
But the Pluto and Sag was spend, and Pluto and Sag was save. Mm. And mm. That's absolutely, it was a careening right into depression.
Yeah.
Ray, do you have something to add?
Yes, from an astrological point of view, I don't think there's any doubt in the minds of most astrologers, with Uranus coming to square Pluto, that things will still get worse before they get better.
Absolutely.
Yet, with Saturn coming into mutual reception to Pluto and Saturn in Scorpio, this is a time of reckoning. This is a time we're going to experience the consequences of this exploding debt problem we've been dealing with. But the Saturn sextile Pluto in mutual reception is also a time when there is a chance that political leaders could get sober and they could realize that this is not a short-term fix that's going to take place here. There's no miracle that's going to take place. This is something that's going to take a long-term plan, and this can be the foundation for something that looks 5 to 8 years out to correct the problem, that will get some kind of a balance between austerity and the need to stimulate growth and employment throughout the world, so we get more people who contribute to their economies than the take from the economies. So I'm hopeful in the long term, but in the short term, the next 2 to 3 years, I do believe, as I think most astrologers do, things will get worse, but a plan can be effected that can build the foundation for a sustainable growth, but it's probably going to be at the end of this decade and early next decade.
Sam, can you? Arch. Yes, can you offer? Do you have?
I'm more concerned about the long term. It looks to me like we're entering the Kondraty of winter, which could last, 15 to 20 years.
Yep.
And this would certainly touch it off, because the whole world is soaked up with all this debt. The whole world is soaked up with the amount of debt, and they keep saying, well, borrow more. Mm. And we've gotten to the point where somebody says, I don't want to buy any more of your bonds if this is going to give me 0% interest income on it. And if you can't borrow any more money, what are you going to do then? Mm. And we're getting to that point. We've gotten to that point in Greece. We're getting to that point in Spain. And I think the United States will be right behind the European Union in possibly total dissolution.
Thank you.
Hakan, can you say speak from a European perspective for us?
The
European perspective.
Because we've seen that the problems were arising when Pluto entered the Capricorn, but at the same time, when Pluto arrived into 5 degrees of Capricorn, then we became aware of the Greek problem, or the Greece economy were shattering. And now the Uranus-Pluto squares, they will be occurring between the 8th degree and 15th degree. And I call the 15th degree of Capricorn is the heart of Capricorn. So this whole Uranus-Pluto squares actually, it's a kind of the representation of the major changes, economic, social, and political changes that we need to be aware. And in the same time, the Saturn in Scorpio, opposing to Taurus, I mean the sign of the wealth, and also we are going to have the eclipses in Taurus-Scorpio axis. So I think the things getting worse and worse. And in the European Union chart, we have there are many charts actually, but I use especially the Leo rising, the moon in the 10th house Taurus chart. So Saturn will be in the 4th house. Major restructuring. I think we need to a clearing of the whole concept of Europe in terms of economy and politics. I think will be probably on the horizon soon.
I also add, with Pluto in Capricorn, we're repeating the cycle where Adam Smith introduced his book Wealth of Nations, which was the father, the start of capitalism, and here we are revisiting the same issue. We're going through the same kind of division, so to speak, in the 1930s. Not only in 1933 did the Glass-Steagall bill, the banking bill, go into effect, and of course its repeal, so to speak, was one of the causes of problems in banking today also.
Antonia.
I want to relate to the work of Karen Hemeker-Zondag. She did a brilliant analysis, and she laid out that almost all horoscopes of the European Union fall on a January 1st. Hmm. It's not only when the euro has been introduced,
yes,
but all the countries who have been joining the European Union had been joining it on January 1st. And January 1st is the degree between 8 and 10 degrees of Capricorn. So, you know, all the countries plus the euro horoscope itself have like a load on 8 to 10 degrees of Capricorn, and now Pluto and Uranus are like firing this load. So, you know, it's kind of likely that we will have an explosion of the euro. And the best thing that could happen would that it would push us to, you know, entering a new consciousness,
yes,
and you're really doing something extraordinary to change it. But it's more likely that there will be a kind of explosion that, you know, is going to blow the whole thing up.
Yeah. Can I just add a little bit on this? I mean, this at the moment you can't turn any television station on without hearing somebody talking about the magic of growth and how that's going to solve our problems, and just arguing about how you get growth, as if growth, if it was to come, would be the solution to everything. And I can't emphasise enough, we are being confronted by a logical reaction of the planet and certain people on the planet to what we've been doing to the planet and each other for 200-300 years through this whole phase that we're talking about. And therefore, it's not about growth, it's about growth and contraction, it's about consolidation, it's about developing decent relationships with each other. Like just one silly example, which I think could apply to many things, we have a problem about looking after old people in our country because there isn't enough money for care homes. But in traditional societies, the old people live with the family. And we have a problem about children. How do you look after young children when the mother goes out to work? In traditional societies, the family looks after the children. That costs a lot of money. We can't afford to waste any more money. These are the kind of questions we have to ask. How do we want to live?
That's great, because I have been in Washington, D.C., crossing borders, even going to the Conservative Political Action Committee, because I want to speak to our inner Tea Party and inner Republicans. Anyway, so metaphoric agility. So talking to Tea Party guy, and he's like, no rules, no EPA, you know, no whatever, because I want to play the games I want to play. And I said, well, that's really interesting, because the essence of games is rules. You know, now we're into the Saturn conversation. He's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And I go, you know, indeed, this planet itself, you know, we have a finite game and an infinite game. This planet itself has Saturn limits, rules, only so much water, only so much temperature. And he's like, I hadn't thought about that either. And I go, go off, young Tea Party person, and reconsider your metaphor. But again, that metaphoric agility. So the, you know, as part of the progressive left team, it's like we often wish that Obama were what the right wing fears and hates in him. Yay, commie, socialist, environmental guy, instead of, you know, mainstream, reflective, you know, moderate Republican guy. But it is that model. You know, there's also the great newspaper story about, you know, the creative suspicion of the industrial robotic German North imposing, you know, grumpitude on the languorous South with its siestas and whatever. So there's a cultural kind of dynamic too. And then so how much Saturn, how much Jupiter, as daughter of New Dealer Congressman FDR, you know, public sector grow, you know, jobs to, you know, engage the ingenuity. You know, we need things done. Pluto Capricorn says infrastructure, dental work, government's economy's collapsing. You know, bridges everywhere in this country. You know, there's work needs to be done. Many people out of work. Let's put this together. And then there's a whole concept of the microeconomies and the local economies. Do anybody here know what Etsy is? Yeah, Etsy. You know, again, small things, it gets 2 to 3 million hits a week. It's handmade.
Oh, Etsy.com.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's a small, huge, it's a Virgo, Pisces, it's a small thing with a huge economic contribution, whereby handcrafts and handmade, even in Syria, people are still on Etsy, even in the war. you know, again, where handmade crafts can be viable economically in a supportive context, that we grow an economy very much like growing something in nature, and unlike that.
Organically.
Yeah.
David, did you?
Well, I was interested that you were actually going right along the line that I was going to question, which is what kind of solutions and ideas people have in terms of more creative solutions as far as dealing with Pluto and Capricorn, as well as the Uranus square, because, and no offense to the UK, but the last time Pluto was in Capricorn, the UK had quite a deficit, a trade deficit in terms of tea. They owed a lot of money to the Chinese, and the way they got out of that was by selling opium. Which of course then led to
when Pluto was in Capricorn, what, in the 18th century, I thought it was 19th century.
No, we're talking early on, the 1700s.
Yeah,
okay. Pluto was in Capricorn.
That's I just feel it's payback time now in many ways to our culture, you know. And we've got to learn that and adjust to it. And this is why the other thing we've got to think about is Neptune being in Pisces. Whereas in the 30s it was in Virgo and fascism was the answer. Now it's in Pisces, kindness is the answer. You know, we've got to change our attitude towards each other or we're not going to solve the problem.
Well, every time Neptune goes in that Virgo Pisces axis, within about 10 degrees of that, you do get economies collapsing. And it's also when Uranus is at the end of the zodiac, beginning of the new zodiac. Those two things happen together because Uranus and Neptune cycles are one half of each other.
Okay, I think maybe this could be the, I'd like to move on to a different topic, but if that could be the last, Grace, I'm going to give you the last word, and then we're moving on.
It's you.
Grace, you are Grace.
You raised the word fascism, and I think this is another repeat of the 1930s. When Mussolini gave the vote, took it away from individuals and gave it to corporations. They were the only people allowed to vote in fascism. So a little similar to Citizens United and corporations are people, against what Roosevelt was considered the socialist because of Social Security. So we had the battle between fascism and socialism, and I wonder who won.
But Grace, what about the reversal? You had Pluto in Cancer and Neptune in Virgo. Now you've got Pluto in Capricorn and Neptune in Pisces.
I think
this might be the solution. We're forced to solve the problem rather than avoid it. We avoided the problem by having a bloody war.
That's a better answer than fascism.
The interesting thing is, in each one of those cases, you give one extreme, one ideology going to an extreme, then you shift to the other ideology going to extreme, and both think it's the other one's fault. But it's a shift because it's extreme on either side.
Right.
Well, it's a shame the guy from WGNO didn't hang out for the rest of this. It's fascinating to hear what you have to say. One of the other topics that we decided we would cover, the theme of this conference, is Venus on the Rise, and I thought maybe first John Marcosella might say something about the transit of Venus. Rumor has it you have some interesting thoughts about that.
As an example of cycles.
Venus,
something that's going on in the music world right now, and very much right now, is Roger Waters, who is a member, or was a member, of Pink Floyd, is coming out with a new tour of The Wall, the music that he created many years ago. Well, it's happening on the Venus retrograde conjunct the Sun in Gemini. He was born with Venus retrograde conjunct the Sun in Virgo in September of 1943. Mm. And it's just an example of cycles with this particular Venus-Sun conjunction.
Yes, Caroline.
Well, I mean, I love the June 5th, which is the same day and the same degree as the 1761 transit of Venus. Again, beautiful symmetry. But I love things lining up. Again, you know, that you know, the Venus cycle is the Inanna myth. So Venus conjunct the Sun is Inanna, or Venus in the underworld, you know, and many, you know, gathering wolf for the next stage of culture. But what's intriguing, again, because it's a big publicity thing, So those with number 14 lens glass will be able to see Venus in the underworld. We see what we normally don't see. Remember, the word obscene comes from Greek stage direction. It means off stage. So we're going to see what we normally don't see. I think it's extremely interesting that it's Venus conjunct transit the sun is also associated with downfall of tyranny. It's the Scott Walker recall election that day, and it's also, as well as the California primary and many other interesting things, and also the anniversary of the assassination of Robert Kennedy. As we see into the underworld and lay certain cycles to rest, like political assassination, one of my clients actually is Sirhan Sirhan's lawyer, and that's coming to light because there's forensic evidence that is now pretty clear, just as a little footnote. You know, when Bobby Kennedy was killed, there were 13 shots fired. Sirhan's gun had 8. He was, you know, shot from in front, and Sirhan was in back, and Sirhan thought he was at the shooting range. Anyway, so we see, just one example, we see into the underworld, and again, this, and the Sabian symbol for that particular image as Venus gets the full kind of woof of the sun is woman activists giving rousing speech, and we go, Venus is coming back from the underworld, and Manners has a voice. Going as at the heliacal rise when she emerges in Gemini, and indeed that might be the planet herself that is the woman activist giving rousing speech. So this idea of media and the invitation to a common story across divisive borders, you know, which is what I learned with hanging out with conservative and Tea Party people. Going, let's find a common story we can agree about that engages the Uranian ingenuity of everybody. You know, to heal our bad manners as a species. And so this age of, yes. Cataclysm and then culture of reverent ingenuity coming up. So we as mythologists and Venus people, our job is to invite people from the thing that's going down to the level of, you know, amazing ingenuity and collaboration, you know, in many ways, you know, that's coming up. So I love Alan Watts saying, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. You know, going, you can stay, you can go down with that thing if you want, but come on over to this cool thing.
Okay, Lynn?
Okay, back in 2004, I tried to look and observe some cycles or trends with the Venus transit. And the last time it occurred was the late 1800s. And I was watching public broadcasting, and they had a story, and the dates were exact. Then I knew what happens historically with the Venus transit. In the 1800s, when you had Venus crossing the face of the sun, you had the first exhibition of Impressionism. That doesn't sound very important, but it gave us a new way of viewing the world. If you go back in history, that's exactly what happens with the second Venus crossing, with the last exhibition, and it became commonplace. At first it was challenging, then it became commonplace, so at the turn of the century, the new modern artists could present their art. When you go back in history, you think of during the American Revolution, the new way of thinking was that the common man could rule himself. We no longer needed a king or a dictator to tell us what to do. And it was a very scary concept. Before that, it was globalization, ships traveling around the world. So I wish I could say what happened in 2004, but I know in history it is a time when we gain a new perspective on life and our world, a new way of observing it. On a personal level, I've observed with people, 2004, if you think back, was a transformational year for many, many people. It was at, I had a study group, oh, 2004, that's when these things happened. I got the Epstein-Barr virus, like mononucleosis. And while I was always interested in medical astrology, I'm where I am today because of having that health problem. So it was a transformational period at the personal level. At some global level, we learn in a way of observing ourselves, of stepping back and seeing our world in a new way. I can't say how this is really manifesting now, but it is so clear when you go back in history. I'll just end about the Mercury transit. That happens more often, and when I see this, it's when Mercury crosses the face of the sun, you get this explosion of the same idea that happens all over the planet. You know, they'll come up with the same concept in all different countries at the same time. So that's what I've observed with the Mercury transit.
Thank you. Lynn. we couldn't stand here in 2012 without talking about 2012, and Tad has some thoughts about the Mayan calendar in 2012, as well as Antonia. So, Tad, first, please.
Yeah, to me it's very relevant, because I'm about 3 weeks older than Roger Waters. So I also have Venus retrograde conjunct Mercury in Virgo. And it's interesting because that Venusian quality, of course, is what the Mayan calendar was based on. And it's kind of interesting to me to see all of the other, well, the Pluto, the Uranus-Pluto square, Neptune being in Pisces, happening around the time that the Mayan calendar ends. But the whole, the myth of it is that, of course, I heard a great analogy the other day that the end of the Mayan calendar is like saying that an automobile that has an odometer that goes up to 100,000 miles and then starts over again at one, it doesn't mean the car is going to disappear or not exist or end. Rather, it's just it's a cycle, and that I think it's very, very important to recognize that astrology is basically about cyclical phenomena. We're talking about cyclical phenomena in all of these little bits and pieces. And I think, again, that the Mayan calendar end having to do primarily with Venusian cycles. To me, Venus is about not only money, but it's also about values. An undercurrent to a lot of what we're talking about now is that we really have to experience a dramatic shift in our values. Yeah. You know, and I think part of it is about, I've been reading recently about this whole grassroots movement in America about how do you create an economy that's not based on growth, meaning the growth society is like a cancer on the planet.
Exactly.
So how do you create a situation where a company that, for example, doesn't make gigantic profits every year but employs tens of thousands of people and maintains a kind of basic level has to create a different kind of value when you devalue this? It's like saying you're opting for a kind of cancerous situation rather than a situation of balance and equilibrium. And, you know, it's interesting, with the Mayan calendar, another issue about it, which I came across some years ago, but the Mayan codexes that actually explicated the Mayan calendar, when the Spanish invaded in the 16th century, of course, the Mayan culture ended hundreds of years earlier, but there were a number of Mayan codexes, particularly about calendars, that existed. And a bishop called Bishop Landa in 1652 sent out conquistadors to destroy every single one of these Mayan codexes except two, which he took. One of them is the Dresden Codex. The other one actually was bought by Carl Jung in the 1920s. But both of these codexes Landa took back to Spain, and he was the one that supervised the translation of the Mayan calendar explication into Spanish. Well, the idea is that what he did was he kind of cleverly worked in a Christian apocalyptic end-of-the-world scenario into the Mayan calendar, which intrinsically had absolutely nothing to do with the end of the world.
Interesting.
They never stated it. It was never part of the argument. In fact, it was, again, about this idea of a shift in value that happens at the end of a world age. So I think it's very, very interesting to me in that respect. Just another side note, I noted, you know, I lived in Denmark for years, and looking at New Orleans horoscope with Neptune conjunct the Sun and Mercury right there, that Sacred Architecture was published while I lived in Copenhagen, and the main early bank building in Copenhagen has a flowing set of steps. It was built in the 1500s. A flowing set of steps, and on one side was the god Neptune, and on the other side, the god Mercury. And the word Copenhagen means, COP basically means a market city, and Havn is a harbor. So Copenhagen is a market harbor, and the gods of Copenhagen are Mercury and Neptune.
Look at New Orleans.
It's a market harbor, with the sun being its identity exactly in the middle of the two of them.
Hey, Ted, we've got an entity that employs a lot of people and makes no money. It's called government.
Right, exactly.
Antonia, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I wrote a book on the whole 2012 story, and I did a lot of research because I was beginning to be concerned. I was beginning because so many people are so convinced that the world really is going to end, and you know there's so many catastrophe scenarios. So I put a lot of research in that. And it's I was just wearing this cycle thing that I put up for this book. You know, if you say that this is the December 21st of 2012, you're having all these great cycles who are coming back to the same point in this year. It's really very interesting. And the smallest cycle is indeed the Venus cycle that started in 2004, which was the year of the first big tsunami. And it's going to complete now. Mm-hmm. And we have more cycles like the Renaissance cycle that completes now. If you dwell on it, it's so interesting that so many cycles point to the fact that we are indeed having a change mm-hmm. of the whole view of the world,
of value,
and society,
yeah, sure.
and value, and everything's really changing. But what I want to say about the 21st of December is I studied this book of this Mayan professor from Austin, Texas. He's really a smart guy, David Stewart. And he calculated all the Mayan numbers. And what he found out is that really the number 13.0.0.0.0, which is marking the same day than December 21st, 2012, which is footnote interesting by itself because we have a lot of 12s versus a 13. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And but they point to the same day. But in Mayan writing, 13.0.0.0.0 is the same day than Mayan creation. It is the same number.
Sure. Yeah.
So he proved that it's more a mathematical cycle thing, and this number is going to come up again in about, 100,000 years or something.
Right.
So he said the Mayan calendar is longer than our knowledge of our universe. So their perspective of the world was bigger than ours. Our 15, what is it, millions, billions of years
right.
to the Big Bang
right.
back
Four
is
billion
nothing
years.
Compared to the Mayan calendar. So don't worry. The Mayan calendar is not ending. It's just a cycle that comes to an end,
well,
but it's a very important one.
There's actually another issue. I've spoken to Eric Francis about it, that when you look at the galactic center, even the most sophisticated infrared telescopes that astronomers have available today, they can only locate the galactic center within a 2-degree margin of error. And a 1-degree margin of error of an alignment of a winter solstice with the galactic center is a 72-year difference.
Mm-hmm.
So to locate
yeah.
it on one day mm-hmm. in one year,
yeah.
yes.
when even mm-hmm. the most sophisticated scientists don't really know exactly mm-hmm. where that galactic
yeah.
center is,
yes.
you know, puts the whole issue into a very different perspective. So
really, the one-day thing really does come from the Mayan calendar because
right.
they have their creation date,
right.
which is minus 3014 BC, mm-hmm. and the same day now is coming up again, and that's a winter solstice day, and that's what's such an interesting link.
Well, it's beginnings
John.
And ends, you know.
Yeah.
The end goes back to the beginning. It's the odometer clicking over again.
John?
I just wanted to tie all of our conversations together just by talking about Pluto and Capricorn. Pluto and Capricorn is the death of the old man, so to speak, whether we're talking about the economy or whatever, any old man customs, but it is also the resistance of the old man to go down,
mm-hmm.
especially in the first decanate while Pluto is in Capricorn.
Sure.
So what we see is the 1% really fighting to stay in power, but we're also seeing old men like Roger Waters, who, by the way, is 68 years old.
Hey,
that's
what do you mean an old man?
performing The Wall. Get it? Pluto and Capricorn, The Wall, bringing it back from the dead.
Yeah.
And just Father Time. Just
yeah.
Capricorn is Father Time. And everyone just being so fascinated with the end of time as Pluto is moving into Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Roger and I had to wait until we were practically 40 before Venus came back to where it was when we were born.
Yes.
No, I'm serious.
Okay, okay.
No, progressed Venus, it took until we were in our late 30s and early 40s, around the time he really flowered.
Yeah.
which is kind of interesting.
And if you saw Saturday Night Live the other night, Mick Jagger is still going strong at 65. But on that note, I have to excuse myself to monitor a lecture on the Mayan calendar with the Muskoka.
Thank you for being here. One of the things that I, you know, I'm struck by is that many of the initiatives during the 60s, when Uranus and Pluto were conjunct, the Great Society, which of course included Medicare, the civil rights movement, the women's movement, all seem up for grabs right now. And we're revisiting it. My belief is that in the end, change continues, and we will, but people would like to turn back the clock and revisit every single one of those issues. And I wonder if Leanne had anything to say about politics,
Tomorrow probably the retrograding Venus will go over the USA Mars, and it will happen again as it comes back. I haven't looked up the exact date, and I'm really very concerned with the U.S. election coming up because of the super PACs, which we all know about. And there are these very wealthy, rich people, that's redundant, excuse me, tossing money about, and there's just no accountability for any of it. And you can accuse anybody of anything, and it just might stick. And so I am thinking, with especially Uranus in Aries and even Neptune and Pisces, a really ugly scene coming up for the next, till the election. And the chart for election night, by the way, mm-hmm. is not something that's going to cheer you up.
No, the Mercury
retrograde.
The
Mercury retrograde in Scorpio, very close to the 2000 chart.
I think the election returns will finally come in from 2000.
Yeah, right. I said that's great. I hope you're right. I am predicting. I am predicting a winner, though. Oddly, I think that the trend seems to be that who's ever in power is out. Sarkozy, I think when Merkel runs in next year, she'll be out. It's happening sort of all over the place, and. But I think Obama will be reelected. The reason I'm saying this, and I'll go out and put my neck on the block for it, is a very simple one. When you compare the USA July 4th, 1776 chart to whoever the candidates are, the candidate usually with the closest connections with the July 4th chart is the one who wins, and that would be Obama. Mm-hmm. It's odd, in effect, actually, to see Romney's chart compared with that country's chart, and of course there are many of those charts, and I don't know what the rising is. Some people think they do. But that's ridiculous. But Ron, you look at it and you say, why is this guy running for president? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the connection?
He wants to be president.
He must be have a desire to be president, but it's not connected to the country. It's right. connected to something else.
It's connected to him.
And I won't even go there.
All right. I don't want to do the presidential panel now because that's our grand finale.
Oh, that's right.
Unfortunately, I'm not on.
Well, I won't be on that panel.
Well, and you have an opinion, I bet.
Oh, really?
I think. And no. Eric, let's hear from Eric, and then we'll hear from Caroline.
Well, this is fun.
Yeah, question from the press.
Yes, the only press person.
It's about the presidential election, so what about that?
What about that?
It's only the second time in U.S. history that there's been a Mercury station on the day of a presidential election. The first time was in 2000. That was a station direct, and now we have a station
retrograde in the
middle of the day. I like your theory that the returns from 2000 will come in 2012. That would be good. Any other thoughts on Mercury stationing on Election Day?
a myth. Oh, this had been happening in Germany, and the result was not sure until the very end. All the calculations that had been done were wrong. And really, only the next day, they really knew for sure. And one candidate from the party that had lost stood in front of the public and said, "We won the election." So, it was crazy.
Well, I mean, that basically happened here, too.
Yeah.
Gore was projected the winner. And
That's
I remember
right.
I had given a talk in front of a women's group that I belong to, and they have me do it every 4 years. And and I said, "Well, you know, whoever it could be that whoever they announce as the winner will turn out to not really be the winner."
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm going to give away my political affiliation when I said, "Oh, Gore won!" I was joyous until I remembered what my own projection was. and within minutes, the whole thing unraveled. But anyway, Caroline?
There's other people who...
I always joke, I lived in Europe for 30 years and came back in 2000, and people said, "Why did you come back?" And I said, "Well, I came back just in time for George Bush to not be elected president."
That's right.
Does anybody else think that we may not have an election?
No, but you do look like Ron Paul, so that's
nice. You look like Ron Paul.
You look like Ron Paul, so that's good that you're channeling.
Yes.
In fact, have we ever seen Ron Paul and you next to each other? We're not sure.
I was kind of thinking we may not actually have the two candidates that we think we have.
No, that's too much of a great cartoon. I just got to bring in Reggie Brown's this great Obama impersonator. No, but he says it's great. Romney is what people who hate white people think of white people. And when we think about because there's a predictive dynamic. I mean, I love what you said and all esteemed colleagues. But then there's also our how do we cooperate this Mercury retrograde? What would we like restored? You know, if we go, we'd like the restoration of manners, that we've outsourced Saturn, our leadership in political and financial ways, to people who have, you know, trained to become sociopaths. Yeah. I mean, the training in this country is skull and bones, you know, where literally the ritual is, I kill my feeling because it is what makes me.